pandemic got us into a reflective space and made us look inward to see what we can do for the world at large. As a self-expression coach, I became a catalyst for women and started Vani, a one-on-one coaching program for women on finding their voice, to speak up, to be visible. As a storyteller, I spotted there were many ordinary people amongst us leading extraordinary lives, making a difference to the world, and they needed to be heard. Thus was born You and I with Rashmi Shetty, where amazing personal journeys with their uniqueness and individuality are showcased. A reaffirmation of the fact, open your eyes wider, the world is far more beautiful when we acknowledge the presence of both you and I. Our guest today is Tim Bunting, who was born in New Zealand and after graduating from the International University located in Palmerston North, New Zealand, he applied for the JET program run by the Japanese government and was sent to Chennai as an assistant language teacher. Tim also holds a master's degree in applied linguistics from Victoria University of Wellington and currently teaches English at Tohoku University of Community Service and Science. In addition to his teaching career, he has also made a name for himself as the Kiwi Yamabushi and works fervently to promote both the charm of the Deva Sanskrit as well as Yamabushi culture abroad on both his YouTube channel and his blog. Listen in as he shares about the mystical qualities of everything Japanese. The mountains, the people, the food, uketamu, Zen meditation, and being a Yamabushi. Hi, hello, welcome, Tim, to You and I with Rashmi Shetty. I can't believe this is happening because I read about you and uketamu in a Speaking Tree article a few months ago, wrote about it and tagged you on LinkedIn. And the universe has a plan. I just realized that we are having this conversation.
Yeah.
Absolutely privileged to have you on this podcast. So I want to know, who was little Tim like to the Tim Bunting that the world knows you today as?
Thanks. Thanks for this opportunity as well. It's great. So little Tim. So probably the thing that connects to the current me the most would be every single day after school, I would go into our backyard, and in our backyard, it was a forest. And so I spent a lot of time just out in nature, just alone, just hanging out with nature, I guess. And I used to love it. I used to always just, it's really hard to describe, but yeah, I'm very lucky to have been born in New Zealand. So New Zealand is full of nature. And every single day I would just come home from school and we'd just go straight into the bush. And my mum's rule was just be back in time for dinner, which was generally before the sun went down. And so, yeah, I would spend a lot of hours outside.
And yeah, was it alone, Tim, or would it be a group of friends and you?
A bit of a mixture. I think most of the time I was alone, but I can remember having some friends with me every once in a while, maybe when they were available.
Okay. Yeah. And how were you in school as a student? Were you somebody who's very naughty, quiet, all by yourself, a lot of friends?
Yeah. I'm a bit ashamed to admit this, but I was quite naughty. I didn't like having to follow the rules. I did have one, I remember one teacher I had was quite strict on me, and that's what I needed. Because I'm not stupid. I would get good grades and everything, but I mucked around a bit. I wasn't always the best student, which I regret now. Yeah, I wish I had been a little bit more strict on myself. But yeah, during primary school in New Zealand, yeah, I wasn't the best student. I think the teacher wasn't didn't really like me. But I tried. Yeah, I think, like, I don't know, naturally I picked up quite a few things. I remember being good at math and not so good at English. I didn't like having to write essays. Now I love it. I love writing. I do a blog every day. But yeah, I didn't I wasn't quite. I don't think I was. Yeah, I don't think the teacher would say I was either.
Okay, and
Yeah.
through primary and secondary school, then on, what did you go to study further?
So I in secondary school. So secondary school is from the age of 13 in New Zealand, and I started to study Japanese when I was 13, and I fell in love with it. So up until and b before that, we had had some Japanese students come and stay at our house, like do a homestay, at least five or six different Japanese people. And so I was exposed to Japan and Japanese culture. And my older brother, he lived in Tokyo for a year as well when I was maybe 11 or 12. And so that had a huge impact on me. And then so I fell in love with Japanese. Yeah, so I started learning Japanese when I was 13, and then I picked it up pretty easily. We learned it very slowly. So we would learn like one character a day. And then I didn't really have to try that hard. But with Japanese, it gets harder as you go along. Like the basics of Japanese are quite easy, but then when you get to about intermediate, it gets really tough. And so I picked up the basics pretty quickly. And then in yeah, I just kept doing that, kept studying that and kept studying Japanese in high school. And then I continued that in university, studying Japanese, and I also studied a bit of business just in general. So my master, sorry, my major was in Japanese. And I had like a minor in business.
Oh, wow. So the language fascinated you so much, or was it the culture that you picked
Yeah.
from fellow students? What is it about Japan that made you even move further into studying
Yeah.
language?
Yeah. So I consider language and culture to be one and the same. And so for Japanese, yeah, I can't really tell you what it is. I think it might be like, it's a combination of different things, I guess. Like the biggest thing is the people. So Japanese people still intrigue me to this day. And I'm really glad that I can speak Japanese now because I can talk to anyone. And especially in Yamagata, where I live. So Yamagata is surrounded by mountains. So Yamagata, it literally means mountain shape. And so we like to say shaped by mountains. So the people of Yamagata are shaped by mountains. So there's not one aspect of their life that is not affected by living near mountains. And so this impacts everything. The culture revolved around in the past, it revolved around getting food and sustenance from the mountains. And then what would you say for these days? So people like especially Yamagata, they like to go outdoors, and that's one thing. So like the people being affected, is that the right word? Like being impacted by mountains or nature, I think that's a huge part. Of food of course. So and Japanese food, I think has a pretty good image overseas, like sushi and all that. Yeah, like I'm in New Zealand at the moment and there's there seems to be a boom in Japanese food. But the stuff I see here is like, it's not authentic Japanese. Like, it's like stuff that New Zealanders have made. But the food as well, like, I love the food. But the thing is, like, when I go to Tokyo, the food is like not as fresh as Yamagata. So if you want to try Japanese food, yeah, I recommend going straight to the source, going straight to Yamagata. So there's the people and the food that I love, and then nature, of course. The nature of Yamagata is insanely beautiful. Mountains, just mountains, rivers, the ocean. We have everything we need. Then the culture and the language. So, especially for me, I really like the culture of the Dewasanzan Mountains, the three mountains of Dewa. So that's where I trained to become a Yamabushi. And so I've made a website, dewasanzan.com, to introduce the area. And I love it. You could go anywhere in Japan and the nature is amazing, like really good views and everything. But I think what makes Dewasanzan special is the culture of the Yamabushi that have been there for at least 1,000 years. And so if there were no Yamabushi, it would just be like a normal mountain. But since the Yamabushi have been there for over 1,000 years, I love the culture that they built. Spiritual, very spiritual connection to nature. And through that connection, there's so much that humankind can learn, I think. And I see it as my job to spread the culture of especially Yamagata Prefecture. I can talk more about
One sec.
that if you want.
There's so much in that answer.
Yeah,
So,
I'm sorry.
no. Do people who live in Yamagata call themselves Yamabushi? Who's a Yamabushi? What influenced you to take that lifestyle? And what were those learnings that made you so you today? Because you seem to be living that lifestyle itself, right?
So not everyone in Yamagata is a Yamabushi, or they call themselves Yamabushi. So Yamabushi follow what's called Shugendo. And Shugendo is the so Shu is ascetic practice, and Gen is from the word Genriki, which means it actually means supernatural powers. And the door is a path or a way, like you may have heard of Kendo, the way of the sword. Judo is the way of the passive. And then like Sado is tea ceremony. Kado is flower arranging. These are all door, they're all path or the way. And so Shugendo is a combination of so it's Shinto, Buddhism, esoteric Buddhism. So that's usually Shingon or Tendai sect of Buddhism. And then Taoism from China, and also native Japanese animism, so nature worship in Japan. And these were all combined into one practice called Shugendo in the eighth, it's either 8th or the 7th century. I think it's the 8th century, I have to check. And so Yamabushi practice Shugendo. And there are many different schools of Shugendo. And so I am part of the Shinto school of Shugendo, which is actually a new form. It was created about 150 years ago. So I can go into that in detail if you want, but it's kind of boring. But long story short is that about 150 years ago, the Japanese government tried to rid Buddhism in Japan, but until then, Buddhism and Shinto were conjoined. they refused, so it didn't like play out that well. And so what happened was on the Devasanzan they split. So the Buddhist, they were Buddhist Yamabushi, but they split into Shinto. And that's, long story short, that's the training that I did to become a Yamabushi. But there is one commonality between all Yamabushi. So Yamabushi live all over Japan. And the commonality is that they all follow Shugendo. Okay, so maybe it's just split into different, like it's expressed in different ways. We do it in a Shinto way, but the original way is Buddhist. And so what got me into it? Yeah, so so where I live, it's called the Shonai region of Yamagata. And the Shonai region is like its own micro, it's like a tiny world. And so it was actually physically separated from the rest of Japan by mountains and the sea. It still is, even like culturally, it's separated as well. It has its own dialects and some traditions that only exist in this region. One example is, so in Japanese houses, normally you would have like a Buddhist altar or a Shinto shrine. So in the Shonai region of Yamagata, they have the Buddhist altar, and directly above they would have a Shinto shrine. I've heard that that's only the Shonai region, but I could be wrong on that. But and so anyway, so the Shonai region. So I moved to the Shonai region in 2010. So, and the moment I moved there, I fell in love with it. As I said earlier, the people, the food, the culture, and the language, the history as well. And so I just fell in love with it. And I felt that there was more that the region could contribute to the world. And so I wanted to try and share this region of Japan, this tiny region of Japan, with the world, but I didn't have like a concrete way of doing that. And so and then I met my partner, my business partner. We do Yamabushi trainings together. His name is Takeharu. We call him Tuck. I met him, it was a week after my dad's funeral. So I went back to New Zealand, and then I came for his funeral, and then I came back to Japan. And a friend of mine had set up a meeting between myself and Takeharu, and Tuck invited me. He said, do you want to be a Yamabushi? Because he had heard of my desire to help spread the Shonai region. And yeah, he asked me if I wanted to be a Yamabushi. I said, I'll do anything for the region. And so this was 2016. And then I started to help out with the Yamabushido project, like helping out make the website, a bit of PR, so like Instagram, and also helping when people came on the Yamabushi trainings. But I didn't become a Yamabushi officially until 2017. So we do a week-long training, and once you do this week-long training, you receive a Yamabushi name, and you can become a Yamabushi officially. That's run through Devasanzan Jinja, Devasanzan Shrine. But that's how I became a Yamabushi. But different schools of Shugendo have different ways of becoming Yamabushi.
If you can just briefly take us, Tim, through
Yeah.
what exactly is this training? Is it a lot of discipline? What is it that this training entails for a person to be a Yamabushi from the clan that you chose?
I'm not actually allowed to give away too many details, okay? But I will say what you can see from the outside. So often Yamabushi are associated with, for example, waterfall meditation. So that's part of the training. And what else do we do? So we visit different places on the mountains where either the kami, so the deities, or the Buddha, reside. And so I'm sure you're aware. So Shinto is not monotheistic, polytheistic. So there are kami in everything. And so we visit these kami all over the mountains, and the same with Buddha as well. And then, so we would visit them and then pray to them. So praying is an extremely important part, of course, to show your respect to nature, to give us for giving us life, essentially. And then we do a whole lot of different rituals as well. So one is the waterfall meditation I mentioned. Sometimes instead of, or in addition to waterfall meditation, we would go inside like a cold river or something and do, it's called misogi. Misogi, like a ablution is what we call it in English. We do a whole lot of different rituals. And each of these rituals, so it originated through the 10 realms of Buddhism. There's like one realm is the beast realm, and for that we don't shave, or we don't do any grooming, personal grooming, or we don't even brush our teeth as well. And so that represents one world. And then waterfall meditation represents there's the Ashuddha world, which is all about becoming resilient. It's all about building resilience. So to be able to stay under the waterfall, it helps build your resilience. And then, so yeah, there's all these rituals that we do, and we do it on the Dewasanzan Mountains. And the Dewasanzan Mountains have been known as mountains of rebirth for over 1,000 years. And the reason for this is because people would visit these sacred mountains, then they would do this ascetic training or some special rituals. And when they emerge from the mountains, they feel like they have become reborn, like they have received a new soul. And so this is common around mountains in Japan, but it's what we do on the Dewasanzan Mountains. And so we wear these white, they're called Shiroshozoku in Japanese. So we wear these white garments, and this actually represents the clothes that the dead wear. They wear on the dead. And so the reason for this is because to have a spiritual rebirth, you first have to metaphorically die. You have to pass away. So which can be a bit scary for some people, but it's all in the promise of becoming reborn. So it's like saying goodbye to your old self and becoming a new self. And that's what the whole ritual is about. And one thing I really love is that the white clothes that we wear, they are to make us look like Fudomyo, who is a Buddhist god, Akala in Sanskrit, and he's such a cool guy, like just the immovable king, right? He's just immovable, just able to just stay resilient, and so we wear the white clothing to make ourselves like him, so to try and channel Fudomyo and to become strong like him. So when life hits you, so like for example, like my father passing away, so it's not easy, right? It's quite a it was quite a tough it is still quite a tough thing. But when I start to feel sad or grieving, I like to remind myself to stay strong, like Fudomyo, like the Yamabushi training has taught me. And we have, so unique to the Dewasanzan Yamabushi is Uketamo. And so Uketamo literally, it just translates to I accept. And so we used to translate it as "I accept with an open heart," but now we just "I accept," just plain acceptance. And so.
When I got introduced to you, as in when I was reading the article on the speaking tree, which is a column which comes in one of the dailies in India called the Times of India, it was around surrender. The article was around surrender, and this is like a few months ago. And that's where you were mentioned, and Uketamo was also mentioned. So, what exactly is it? Was the article which I really loved. And so if you can take us through what Uketamo is and why and how you got associated with it. Is it part of the Yamabushi culture as well?
Yes, it is. So the best way to understand Uketamo is to come and do the Yamabushi training. Okay. There's only so much I can describe with words. I'm sure you already know that. And it's the same thing with like Yamabushi training. Like you can't describe it. Like you have to do it to be able to understand. And then it's also like because the lessons of Buddha are projected onto the mountains, and the only way to really understand it is to go and absorb it yourself rather than having someone tell you about it. So to truly understand it, I'm afraid you're going to have to come and join us on the mountains,
Because in India, like you spoke some time back, you told us about Akala. So the same
yes.
in India also, there is this mode of surrender when we are in complete faith. The Bhakti Yoga Marga is completely surrender. So you kind of
I love
accept
it.
everything that is there, that is given to you, and you just go with the flow. Is Uketamo similar that you just go with?
I would say it's exactly the same. Maybe exactly the same. Because it's about surrendering, it's about acceptance. And yeah, so how it manifests is that during the training, your master will say, "We will now climb Mount Haguro and Uketamo," and you climb Mount Haguro. Or "We will now do waterfall meditation, Uketamo," you do waterfall meditation. And so throughout the training, we are constantly saying, "Ah, sorry, the only thing you can say is Uketamo." And so during the training, the master will say, "We will now climb Mount Haguro, Uketamo." No questions, no complaints. Nothing, you just do it. And throughout the training, there are many times where we just uketamo, uketamo, uketamo. And this is because it's like to be able to become anew, to be able to create or to become a new person, you have to accept your current self. And so we're constantly accepting our current self to be able to move on. And so that's probably like the basic understanding of Uketamo.
So, does it have concepts of self-compassion and self-love as
Yes,
well?
exactly. Yes, yeah. And it's not just following orders, right? It's not just doing exactly what the Yamabushi tells you, but it's also accepting your current self. Like maybe what would you say? So maybe you feel a little tired, or maybe tired isn't a good example, because or maybe you feel like you just don't have confidence to continue, but you get them all, and then you find that you can actually continue. So it's like a way of building self-belief as well. And it's often, so you're kind of forced to do some of these things, like waterfall meditation and stuff. Like if you really don't want to, you can quit, but you're kind of forced to do these things. And at first you might think you can't do it, but if you get them all and you actually attempt it, you find that you can actually do it. And so it's a way to build self-belief as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is there a diet restriction or things that you should eat or should not eat during the training process or once you become a Yamabushi?
Yeah. So, when you're doing Yamabushi training, you're doing Yamabushi training, but every other time it's just normal life. So, like, yeah. And so when we do Yamabushi training, there are dietary restrictions. So one of the, I mentioned the 10 realms earlier, and one of the 10 realms is, in Japanese, it's called Gakugyo. It's, in English, we call it the hungry ghost realm. And so during this, so we do fasting. So we do fasting, but we do fasting, and then when we do receive food, it's usually very sparse. So it's rice, miso soup, and some pickles. And there is a rule that you have to eat as fast as possible. And so this is one reason is so we can return to training straight away. So like we can get the bare minimum so that we can still survive, because we are human. And the other reason is it's like the hungry ghost. So it's like a ghost. I think it's in the afterlife, the ghosts that can't, or like you can't get your fill. Like you're always wanting more. It's to imitate this one of the realms, 10 realms of Buddhism.
And when you look back, Tim, when you went through this whole training yourself and post that, how you look at life, do you remember moments which were like aha for you, which were eye-opening, which you always go back to when you have questions on your journey?
Yeah, it's strange. I don't know, I'll just admit this. I started crying during the training. And one of the reasons why is because I remembered something that my mom did, like when I was little. And so like I felt love. And I think it might actually be, I think the love between a mother and child is probably the purest form. I could be wrong, but I like to think that. And so just during the middle of training, and I was just walking in, we were walking at night, and it was dark, and we were just walking in the bush, and all of a sudden I just started crying. And so I often say that Yamabushi training, so it takes you, so my master will, he doesn't like me saying this, but I like to say that the Yamabushi training takes you away from everyday life. And the reason why my master doesn't like me saying this is because Yamabushi is also part of everyday life. So it's all the same. Okay, but it does take you away from like from well, for example, from my wife, my daughter. And so it takes you away from everyday life. I don't know how else to word that.
In India, we have a concept called detached attachment. You're attached, but you're also detached because you become objective. It's not that you don't love them anymore, but then you know where to draw the lines.
I
That
loved that. Yeah.
helps you a lot to go through life. That in the Bhagavad Gita, there is a concept of the Stitha Prajna. Somebody who is part of it and still learned how to detach himself from it.
I
So,
love that.
yeah, so I think similar, where you're attached and still you know you have to be detached. So, I know what you're trying to say. And in this mode, when you are in this mode and this is how you're leading your life, for the rest of the world, the pandemic was that mode when we went into a pause. And be like, oh my God, what's happening? But for somebody like you who was already in that space and life was only uketamo, was the pandemic easier for you to handle? What were your reflections and how did the pandemic treat you?
So Japan didn't really have a lockdown, so which is a bit different to other places. But we did, We did spend a lot of time inside, though purposely not going out or going out very minimally. And in my case, I don't know, I got itchy feet. So I kept going out into the mountains because there's no one there, so it's safe. And I don't know, like for I get what you're saying, like reflections as a Yamabushi onto on the pandemic. I think I have a special case, like my family, we just stayed inside a lot. Except I did go out into the mountains. I'm sorry, I had a bit of time to think on this one. So the pandemic, yeah, so we I did I asked my Yamabushi master about how to think about the pandemic, and there's a video of this on YouTube actually, on Yamabushi Do YouTube. And basically all he says is just to be compassionate to everyone. Like, so we don't know what other people are going through. And so we have to respect who they are, and what they do for what they are. And I think the pandemic, like, it highlighted the struggle that some people are going through, like, could be much worse than others. And so we have to find a way to support each other. And there's, it's tough. Myself personally, so because I had done Yamabushi training, I was more used to being forced to do something I didn't want to do. And so I felt like I could accept things more easily than the people around me. But then again, I didn't have as much, maybe I didn't have as much, like, for example, my sister here is like, they had a much longer lockdown in New Zealand. And so, yeah, I don't think I had a as hard a time as other people, if I'm being honest. So,
I think you already were living in a lockdown of sorts with yourself and the world with a detachment. And the attitude of I accept Getamo had somewhere changed the entire perspective of life itself for you. Has it? Has
yeah, I think it has.
it changed the perspective of life and
It
being?
definitely has, definitely has. So I find that, so when you do, I'm sure you're aware of this, but like when you do meditation, for example, like you get the thoughts come into your head and you just let them flow. And so I like to try and separate, like, this gets really hard to describe, but like the thoughts that you come in that come in, they're just your thoughts. Like, when you attach a feeling to it, then it can affect how you react. But you can change which feeling you attach to these thoughts that come in. And so, like, I try to just take things slower, like not to react, and try and have like accept things for what they are, but then not attaching additional or excessive thought onto it. That's one thing I did learn from training. But that's also something I learned from Zen Buddhism, as opposed to training as a Yamabushi.
I think you're the right person now to ask then. People say when somebody is very quiet, they're calm, they say, okay, this is the Zen state that you're in. Now, don't be in the Zen state all the time. So, since you've done Zen Buddhism, what is the Zen state? What is that meditative state? Who is called a Zen Buddhist or a Zen follower?
So I've only done barely minimal Zen meditation, Zen we go to there's a temple that we go to, and I've interpreted for a lot of the monks there, and done a bit of the training myself. So Zen, I don't know. It's like a state of nothingness, I feel. Like you don't like they truly have no attachment to anything. Or I don't know if that's entirely true, because I have come across a monk playing like a video game. It was pretty funny. But yeah. A lot of the I don't really want to say this, but a lot of the monks that I've interpreted for, like, they had a really tough life before they became monks. And so I'm talking about like depression, and in Japan there's a problem with called hikikomori, where people like just stay inside their whole lives. And I've met a few monks who had that, but they found meaning through Zen. And the irony is that Zen is about doing nothing. It's just about being. So it's about here, now, and self is what they always say. And so Yamabushi's training is about here, now, and self as well. Like everything is about putting you into the moment. And so I think if you're able to constantly live in the moment, if you're able to reflect on the now, then I guess that's probably what Zen is trying to get people to do.
And that'd be such a beautiful state to be all the time if you're
Yeah.
here at the now.
I asked the monk if there was anyone in the world who had reached enlightenment, and he told me, yes, there are millions. Babies.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Babies. They're just living on instinct. So, yeah, that was really cool.
In fact, that is a very beautiful reflection, because that means we are born to be like that. It's
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
just that as we grow up and the distractions around us take away from what we are blessed.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like about getting back to like I kind of like my Yamabushi master, Master Osho, he does say this. He says it's about getting back to a time before we were born. And so Yamabushi training is like that. Like the mountains we consider the womb. So the mountains are the mother's body. And so when we're there, it's the time before we are born. So Yamabushi is about getting back to that. Yeah.
That's really beautiful. And now that you are in that reflective, powerful state, three life lessons, Tim, that you'd like to leave us with, that you follow and you think can help us have more
Yeah.
full lives.
So I believe in karma. I believe that the good we do returns to us, and the evil we do returns to us. And so I like to try and do as much good as I can. So for Yamabushi, we have it's called Hansei Hanzoku, which literally translates into English as half sacred, half secular. And this is a concept where what you learn on the mountains, you can apply to your daily life. And what you learn in your, well, again, with the daily life thing, but what you learn in your daily life, you can apply to your time on the mountains. So I like to, every time we finish Yamabushi training, we have a big, it's called Naorai, where we all sit down and share our feelings from the training, and so and how that can affect how it can affect your life from that point onwards. And so I don't know, I guess Hansei Hanzoku is about how to make the most of your experiences in the real world, like having time to reflect on them. And last is definitely Uketamo. I can't think of anything better. So Uketamo is when you practice Uketamo, it becomes easier. But it's Yeah, it's never easy to, well, sometimes it is, but it can be extremely difficult to accept some things. But when you know that if you could only accept them, then life would become easier. It makes it easier to accept, I think. And then if you can practice it with even little things as well, like Yamabushi training is the perfect example, but even like little things that happen to you, if you can learn to accept them, then it kind of has like a what do you call it, roll-on effect. So it yeah, Ukitomo more especially is something that yeah, it's changed my life completely. Like, yeah, it's life hasn't been easy for me either. Like, besides my dad dying, I've been through a few other things. And so, but I know that if I can accept, then I can live happy. And I do, I feel happy, I feel content. Yeah, life's also given me a lot of good. So,
True, true. And
yeah.
looking back, Tim, at your life being born in New Zealand and now in between New Zealand and Japan, and especially the Yamagata Mountains, if there is a Japanese word which will describe your state of being, what would that word be and why?
Can I not use it, Ukitomo? I was asked this question recently. I was asked which Japanese kanji would you choose to illustrate your life, and the kanji I chose was the kanji for Ukitomo, which yeah, it means to accept or to surrender as well.
Okay, so
Yeah.
all that I have for you is complete gratitude and to the universe for putting us together.
Yeah, exactly.
When I
Yeah.
read that article, I never thought that I'd be talking to the person who was referred there, and along with that, Ukitamo. So I completely am in the Ukitamo mode of I accept, I surrender to the universe because the universe definitely has plans in place. And completely grateful to you, Tim, for sharing your journey,
Likewise.
your learning.
Yeah, I'm very happy to have met you,
Yeah.
Rashmi.
May your tribe increase. May you just continue to spread the glory of Ukitambo, which is such a beautiful way of being. And God bless you, your family, and all that
Thank
you're
you.
With that, we come to the end of this weekly quest of You and I with Rashmi Shetty. Do let us know if you know people who make the world beautiful. Write in to rashmi.thethirdeye@gmail.com. That is RASHMI dot THETHIRDEYE at gmail.com. Come. Let's explore this amazing world together, both you and I.